The Plotcast Podcast with the Potty Plotters.
Hello and welcome to the Potty Plotters Plotcast Podcast. This is episode 6 of season 2 and I'm Julia.
And I'm Elaine, and I haven't got a Radio 4 accent like you, Julia.
I've got all Radio 4.
You did, definitely. Oh, gosh, no. How interesting.
Let's slip back into my dog.
That's right. Okay, then, crack on.
Okay, in this episode, we're going to be talking about water and slugs. And how to keep them under control.
Big stick, yeah.
And we're also going to be talking about sand and how to use it on the plot.
Oh, right, yeah.
And can we have a drum roll? I'm sure Gareth could do this for us. We have got what we consider the King of Allotments, Rob Smith, on. We've interviewed him, haven't we, Elaine?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're a bit gooey-eyed, aren't you?
Well, no, because I think he knows what he's talking about.
He does, and he's a northern lad.
And he talks like we do.
Yeah.
That's what we want. That's what we like. Yeah.
Well, let's just say, I think he was relieved he was at a safe distance when he spoke to us.
If you'd like to support the podcast, you can leave us a tip at ko-fi.com/thepottyplotters. That's ko-fi.com/thepottyplotters. And we'll love you forever.
Right. Updates. We're all sat round the table.
We are. Pensive. We are, yes.
Yeah, so you sprung upon us some microgreens in a little tin.
Yes.
And told us all we had to do an experiment, didn't you?
Well, I thought it would make for interesting listening, in that you do see a lot of things online, and I'm always curious as to whether they really do work. So I do class them as presents to you both, obviously.
Do we need to get in early with the excuses? This is like, it was like homework, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Cat ate it.
Oh, right. I don't think so.
Forgot to plant it. Well, I didn't forget. I wasn't here for a couple of days, so I didn't want to do it while I wasn't here. The other half was a bit ill, so we kind of waited. So we're probably a little bit behind you two. Well, I said that. A little bit behind you.
Me?
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, I'm looking at the dazzling array
of Julia's.
I mean, what was it that you took?
Right, so I took...
Well, yes, let's start at the beginning.
Okay.
So each of you, well, you were given the opportunity to have any tin.
Yes, we were.
Not Julia, any tin. There was three of them.
I was last, I got what was left.
Okay.
So, Julia, you had...
Red Mazuma.
And Gareth, you had...
Rocket.
And I had Radish. Okay, then. So, Julia... I'm laughing because it's a pity this isn't filmed, although Gareth can do that.
Yeah.
Is that you've got an array now of seedlings in different stages of growth, and all you've got to do was read the instructions. I mean, that's all we have to do every week when we do this, but we never do it. So now then, explain. It's no good just throwing your arms up in the air and about to talk.
Well,
What happened?
I read the instructions where it said that I was to put warm water onto the coir.
Okay, so it's a little disc of coir.
Yeah. Now, my experience...
I think, actually, we ought to go back a step, and for people like me, explain what you mean by the word coir.
Coir is really the bits that are off a coconut.
Yeah.
That's the best way of describing them. And they have travelled a very long way because we can't grow coconuts in this country at the minute.
No. And then they are compressed into little discs.
Yeah.
And you can buy them in almost like bricks, can't you, in the garden centres.
Yeah.
And normally, when you put water on, they literally explode. And what was one brick suddenly becomes a whole 10-litre bucket full of coir.
Yeah.
So I was expecting the same effect to happen with the disc.
That is about the size of a pound coin.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
So what did you do then, Julia?
Well, I put some water on it, expecting it, but obviously I put too much water on it, and it just went like, how can I say, like Weetabix that had had far too much milk on it, and it was just sloppy. And then I tried to strain it, but most of it went down the drain. So I thought, come on then, let's start all over again. I've got four of these discs, you know. It's first thing didn't work. And actually, when I confessed to it, then you confessed to having exactly the same problem.
Don't drag me into yours. You carry on with yours. So.
So then I went to a second disc and put far, far less water on it.
Okay.
Now, when it swelled
That's because it didn't say in the instructions how much water to add.
No. And my experience, as I say, of coir in the past is it needs quite a bit.
Yeah.
So then I did the next one. And I thought, well, there's still not much coir there, even now it's swollen up. So it'll never be enough to fill the bottom of my tin. So what I'm going to do is put it in the tin lid. Oh, God. So I'll put it in the tin lid.
Yeah.
And even though it just mentions tin, you see, in the instructions, but I interpreted it different.
Okay.
So then I squashed my coir on it and I sprinkled the amount with the scoop of the seedlings. And I then covered it as instructed with a piece of cardboard and put it somewhere warm and left it to germinate. And they have germinated.
They have.
And I would say, most of them, they're quite small, but I think that's the seeds themselves. So when we go on to yours and when we start oohing and aahing about yours, your seeds were significantly bigger than ours.
I'm just going to say, I got what was left.
Absolutely.
I didn't get the opportunity to. Don't even think you're coming in yet, Gareth, because you're not. So, Julia, I also see then a takeaway container that's also filled with seedlings.
Well, then I looked at it and I thought, well, that's all right, but I bet I could do this with
So you've gone off piste and decided to do your own thing.
Well, okay. I just thought, you know, there must be other ways of doing this. And, you know, you've obviously been out and spent your hard-earned pocket money.
Yeah, I have. Waste of time, obviously. But nevertheless.
So I thought, well, I think I could do this very cheaply with like a packet of seeds that I've maybe perhaps had half open that I've at the end of the season that I want to try something new, or I don't know whether they're going to germinate. So all I did was put a damp piece of kitchen towel at the bottom of our takeaway container, sprinkled the seeds, same seeds, and covered it and clipped the lid on the takeaway container and put it in a warm place. And look, exactly the same.
It has. It's worked really well.
It's worked. So, you know. And then I thought, now, was it last night or the night before, Gareth? We had a message, didn't we, saying, you must bring your homework to the next recording.
I think the teacher sent the homework. Was it I think it was last night.
Yeah. So I thought, oh my goodness, I'd better set some as per the instructions. So as per the instructions, that is the one that is in the container, the deep container part of it. But still, I don't think there's much coir in there. But, you know, I've done what it said and they've all germinated, so
There you go. The experiment has worked, and it's worked just as well, though, with the seeds in your own takeaway container. Yeah. Well done, Julia.
Thank you.
I'm going to get the scissors in a minute and have a nibble. Right then, talking of which, Gareth.
Hello. So, as I say, I was trying to get the excuses in early. So I was working away, I left on Sunday, was back on Tuesday. The other half was ill, so I didn't want to set it and then need some tender loving care while she was ill. So I got them set on Tuesday. So we followed the instructions.
Yeah.
We put the coir in and sprinkled the seeds on. It's been in the airing cupboard, which isn't really an airing cupboard now because we don't have a boiler in there. So they have sprouted, but they're a bit yellow. They don't look like rocket.
They don't look tempting, do they?
No, they don't really at the minute. So what's the next step, oh teacher?
Right, well, before we get on to that, Gareth, you've done quite well. I'm just going to put my finger on the coir just to see how damp that is. Oh, that's okay, yeah. Right, okay. Well
top
done,
mark
but yes,
so far. Yeah.
They have gone yellow simply because they haven't got any light. And what we need to do is to take the top off as soon as the seeds germinate. Mm-hmm. So I think if you put those in the windowsill, they'll turn green.
Okay. Good luck in finding a windowsill.
Right, okay then. Well,
where
we will.
The cat doesn't go.
Okay. And then there's mine.
Oh, here we go.
Teachers, here we go. Oh, now then, I got the radishes. I was dumped with them, but nevertheless.
You like radish.
They don't do anything for me, really. And all I've done is,
follow the instructions.
I did follow the instructions, Gareth. However, I have to confess, when I got my coir disc and added water, I did exactly the same as Julia and ended up with a big sloppy mess. So I used my initiative and I chucked in another disc, which soaked up all the moisture straight away.
I never thought about that, you see. Mm. Just went down the sink.
So with your experiments, Julia, does that mean that that is all you're going to have now because you've used all the coir?
I've got one coir disc left, but of course I've got plenty of kitchen towel.
Yeah, so that will work. And mine, I think, are ready to eat because they look quite magnificent. Oh. I haven't used the lid like Julia has. And, they look all right.
So purple radish aren't like proper radish then? They don't develop the... Is it the bulb that you call it? The radish bulb at the bottom?
The seed. The seed, it would just develop into a radish, yeah.
Will they?
Well, it should, but I don't think this will, because it hasn't got the depth.
Well, they've not got the room to grow now,
have they? No, 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 because I've grown it just...
and pop them.
So, another little experiment then. Pricking out. Yes.
Looking at the mass of rocket.
Yeah.
If there's actually enough room for it to grow, for it to become useful, because you use a bit of rocket on a salad, side salad, but you're not going to use a ton of it. And there's quite a lot of seedlings there.
Yeah, but you're
Is it survival of the fittest?
But you're not pricking them out, are you, Gareth? You're just letting them grow, so they're not going to grow any bigger than that.
No.
So that's not even a meal's worth.
No, but what we're going to do is you take them.
It's garnish.
It is, Gareth. That's the word. So what we can say about that experiment. Oh, I did do a little bit on kitchen towel as well, Julia, because I can't resist it. And you've had better success than me.
Yeah.
So they have sprouted, yeah. But there's not going to be a glut. The other thing is they don't taste of chocolate.
No. Okay.
So what's the point of doing them?
The Plotcast Podcast with the Potty Plotters.
Elaine,
moving on.
Yes. You've been using bits from the kitchen to cover up your bulbs, haven't you? Didn't you have a colander out or something?
I did, yeah. And all I've done is I popped the colander upside down onto the top of a plant pot, and I thought, well, it's risky because it could well be that there's light that now is being, you know, it's putting all the bulbs in shade. But what I can say is they've all popped up.
Oh.
Yeah, and there's no damage whatsoever because nothing else can get in there, and it clipped perfectly to it. So it is something to do in the future.
Oh, so... That present that I bought you for Christmas, was it useless then?
No, yours is a bit big, yeah. That's all. Oh. And what I've done is I've put that on a big pot, big terracotta pot. So that's protecting those. But the main thing is that the colander fits lovely. Brilliant. Straight over the top. Why not?
Okay. And the snapdragon seeds. Can you remember, I think Gareth did a video of it even, where I was using my little cocktail stick and pricking them out. I can say it's been very successful.
And mine have been too. I'm just a bit worried now as to what I'm supposed to do next.
Prick them out. See, you didn't do the cocktail stick, did you?
No.
You just scattered them.
I did.
Whereas I've used the cocktail stick, put them in each cell, and now they're happily growing along. So we're already on the first set of true leaves.
Are you?
So, yeah.
Okay, well, I'm not, but I moved mine into a cool area.
Yeah.
Not into the greenhouse.
No.
But I've moved them into a room in the house that is cold. Well, yeah. I think it's quite cold. So they have slowed right the way down.
Right.
So what do I do then? Do I have to move them again to get them growing again?
No, I wouldn't. I think they need a kind of cooler heat. You don't want to force them too quickly because we don't want them to get leggy.
Okay.
So, you know, just let them come along at their own pace, because we won't be putting them out until... Well, probably about June time, May, June time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right, then. I'll keep them where they are. Thanks.
Right. And you've got a little hint and tip, haven't you?
We do like hints and tips, don't we? And all mine is to keep hold of all of your coffee jar.
Yeah.
And actually, any of the jars that are quite big. Now, it doesn't matter if they've had pickle or anything in them, because you just need to wash them thoroughly. Keep them on one side, and then we can use them as free vases later in the year when we start giving out our dahlias, cosmos, snapdragons, and all the rest of it.
That's lovely.
Doesn't matter then, you don't want them back, but they really do work, particularly if you're doing something for... perhaps donations. That's always nice, isn't it? If you're doing a Macmillan or something like that.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah.
Keep them there.
And then people have got them in the water vessel, so it keeps them nice and healthy.
Yeah.
Until,
Much easier to pick them straight in.
Yeah. Okay, that's a good idea from you, Elaine.
You're sounding like that was a shock.
Hints and tips for shortcuts to success. The Potty Plotters Plotcast.
Water. Well, I don't know why you've written water on this schedule for today, because we're surrounded by it. There's not a drop to drink, but there's water everywhere.
I know. Well, the reason is, again, I've seen things on the internet and I thought, you know, this is all wrong. And I feel sorry for people if they don't know the right way to water things. Mm. So I thought, let's go through some of the things that we know work and then share that with people.
Yeah.
So the first thing, Julia, I bought the sprayer in.
Move,
I know. Yeah, get one word wrong and you're in.
Yeah.
I've brought the sprayer. When do we use the sprayer?
So we use the sprayer when we're setting...
I won't even use it for sound effects, Gareth.
No. So when we're setting delicate seeds to start off with, and we just want to dampen the compost, but we don't want to drown the seedlings or anything like that. We're just giving them a little bit of moisture to get going. That's when we use it. And we use it, say, for example, with the... peppers, chilies, aubergines. We always spray the compost first, then we lay the seeds on, then we put the compost on, then we put them in a container to retain the moisture, or in a bag, and that is when we use the sprayer, because we don't want too much wet, because we don't want them to rot, and they only need a little bit, but that is when we tend to use that. Yeah,
so you're just moistening, really.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Right then, we also talk, particularly when we get doing loads of seeds, we talk about watering from the bottom.
Yes.
Now, I know that people have asked us in the past, what do you mean by that? Because, of course, we know, we can visualise it, and we do it.
Yeah.
But what does that actually mean?
So what that means is get yourself some kind of vessel that's obviously not got holes in it and fill it with water.
Like a washing up bowl.
Washing up bowl, a seed tray without any holes in, something like that, and fill it with water about halfway up, and then all you're doing is moving the cell trays that you've perhaps got plants in, or where you're going to be setting seeds, and just dunk it in the water. And when I say dunk it, I mean sit it in the water, and all that will happen is, of course, your cell tray or your cells will have holes in the bottom, and that will just suck up the moisture, so you're not disturbing the top of the plant in any way. It's just taking up what it needs.
So at the moment I've got some chilies, they've sprouted, they've germinated, and they're about an inch and a half tall.
Yeah.
What I've done in the little plant pot, because that's what they're in, what I've done is I've put the whole plant pot in, it's actually an old fruit dish, similar to a takeaway container, with no holes in the bottom.
Yeah.
And I've just put it in there, and I put that in probably once a week at the moment, just so it takes up the water that it needs, and then take it back out again.
That's
important. That's watering
that's
from the
bottom. That's really important as well, because we've seen people do it, and that's great, but then they've left it in the water, and of course then it leaves a soggy mess, really, because you've still got nowhere to drain all the water from. So make sure once the tray or whatever has sat in the water for a while, you lift
it out.
Because remember that plants will struggle if they're drowned. They'll struggle, they'll rot, they'll die. Whereas actually, if you're underwater and you've not got too much water, it's like you and I, really. If we were to dip in water, we'd drown in water if we were submerged in it. Whereas if we were thirsty, yes, we'd be uncomfortable and it'd be unpleasant if we were dehydrated, but we would be able to recover from that. So it's better to err on the side of caution than go the other way and overwater.
Right. Then, of course, we go to perhaps watering above. So people who have got watering cans and a rose, that's the spray on the bottom.
Yeah.
So if you've got a rose, when would you use a watering can to water from above?
Not that often, to be honest with you.
The irony of that is that whenever you see people watering and in like a cartoon or something, that is the method that they use, isn't it? In fact, I think we've got that on our logo, haven't we?
Yeah,
so Gareth, woke Gareth up then, did you say?
Well, I think you would use it. Say we set a row of carrots and we've set them in the ground and we've set the seeds in the ground. That is when you would use a rose. So, I mean, if we didn't have the rose on the end and we were just doing it from the sprout, it'd all come out in one big gush and it'd move all of the carrot seeds. Whereas if we're watering along the row with a rose, it will kind of, it'll be almost like rain coming on it rather than a big kind of deluge of water. So, but most of the time we actually take the rose off the watering can and we water at what is the base of the plant. So when we're watering, say, things like tomatoes,
peas,
everything like that, we don't want to water from above, because if we catch the leaves of the plant, it could get all mildewy if we catch it and it's a bit damp in a place. But also, if the sun shines on it, that sun and water is going to burn the leaves of the plant. So we water at the base, and we water at the base because the water will go directly to the roots. And that's really important, because it's the roots that need the water, not what's above it.
So we'll always remind people when we say water, we'll say which way to actually do it, so that they make a success of it rather than wrecking everything.
Yeah.
All right, and let's.
Elaine, you've got listed here sand on the plot. What do you mean? Are we having a beach or something?
Oh, tell you what, that'd be lovely, wouldn't it? But very scary. No bikinis. We'd have to have signs, wouldn't we? Keep your clothes on. Anyway, so the reason that I've put sand is because we talk to people often and we explain about the use of sand, and not a lot of people know. We've had a huge amount of floods on our site, never mind everywhere else. Yeah. So now is the time to order sharp sand. I have used builder's sand in the past. It does work, but not as good as sharp sand. And that will improve the drainage. But if you also think about it, beetroot, parsnips, carrots, onions, shallots. I've got my hand up because I'm counting it around my fingers. I don't know why, because you know that. Yeah. But the important thing is, Julia, that if you order it now, and I've ordered half a ton.
Good Lord.
I know, but I'm going to then rake it in and dig it into my raised bed. So get yours ordered if you want some as well.
So when we're telling people to order it, is it about 50-50 with the quantity of compost?
You can actually work 70-30, depending on what you're growing. But when we get to those stages of setting the parsnips, the carrots and so forth, we'll talk more about it. But it's no good catching up. What we need to do is get them ahead with us. And it does work, I promise you.
Okay. And of course, another thing, we've been talking about water, and the big thing with water, it always brings out the slugs and snails.
It does.
So what are we going to do about it?
Right, well, what we're going to do is, after today, when we start to get back out onto the plots and start to plant up, I thought what we'd do is we'd do some experiments. Ooh. And we're going to work with slug pellets of different varieties, slug gone and go slug or something similar.
The wall pellets.
Yes, and we're going to use those. And we're also going to use nematodes.
Yeah.
So we'll use nemaslug, and we're going to do an experiment right across the plot as to which will keep them off. No guns.
Can we do it on your plot? Because I don't want to lose anything.
You don't want to lose anything? How very selfish. I let you choose your tin, didn't I? Yeah, I didn't argue. But yes, that's not a problem, Julia.
The Plotcast Podcast with the Potty Plotters.
So earlier this week then, Julia, didn't we have some fun talking to the King of Allotments, Rob Smith?
Oh, we did, we did. I mean, he might not say that, but we loved speaking to Rob, didn't we?
We did, and what we can tell you is that Rob's got a new book out later this month called Grow to Eat.
He has, and we probed him about it, didn't we? Well, you probed him. You probed him.
There's been a lot of probing going on, I'll tell you. Anyway, we spoke to him just as the heavens opened again, do you remember? Oh. And as ever, it chucked it down. Yeah. But we started asking him how his garden is coping with the wet.
Basically, it's not stopped raining since July, I don't think.
No.
And it dries out for a couple of days, and then literally you get a bit of rain, and it just, everything starts to flood because the ground just can't take any more. It literally is saturated, isn't it? So if the reservoirs aren't full now, they're never going to be.
Yeah. No, and we'll be moaning in a few months saying that we've got no water. Yeah. You can guarantee, hopefully.
And no pun intended, I've got quite a big butt and it's absolutely full to brimming.
We do get the weather. We do get the rain like you've had. So I was wading in my greenhouse the other day. That's not good, is it? Wading through to get to my seedlings.
It's quite worrying, isn't it? My shed's at the top of the garden, which is at the top of a hill because it's on a slope. And a part of the shed floor started to go a little bit. Do you know when you see it going damp and you think, that's because the water underneath is just coming up. Yeah. It's just, it can't drain away.
And the worrying thing for us, actually, Rob, is that it might put off people who perhaps this year is their first year at having a go at growing their own. And that's a worry because we do want people to carry on. We want them to be as excited, as bonkers and enthusiastic as we are. And we know that you are.
Yeah.
You know, we do follow you. Well, stalk, I think it's fair to say. Yeah.
I saw you yesterday when I opened the curtains.
Yeah, it was us. Yeah, we get around a bit. Yeah. But it is a worry, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where it's when it's muddy and it's cold and it's wet, people just, you don't want to go out anyway, do you?
No.
So we're used to it. We know it's got to be done. But I think it's one of those things where if that is the case, start using containers, because there's no way you can plant in the soil now. Like if you put garlic and things in last year, they're probably going to be floating away. So I've started over the last few years, I sow everything normally in raised beds or containers to plant out in the spring, because I just think otherwise you're just setting yourself up for heartache.
Yeah, and it's a long season then if you can't get things in the ground. I mean, we've got a new plot holder and she's lovely and she's really, really worked hard, and her plot is completely underwater. And we looked at her the other day and she could have burst into tears with us. And we said, you know, in the summer months, hopefully it'll pay off. And, you know, the work that you're putting in and the fact that we've got the high water table will work to our advantage. But she can't see that positive side that we kind of look forward to. But it's a hard time for new people, particularly because we know that the good times are coming.
Well, I think that the good times have come because I know that Rob has written a book, Grow to Eat. I can tell you everything about it if you want. Yeah.
To be your promotional person.
I can be your PR person. You'll never get a bigger one, I'll tell you that.
And you'll never get a word in either.
Yes, and understand that it's going to be released on the 21st of March.
Well, it was.
Oh.
So it's been delayed a couple of days till I think it's the 26th now. So I've been affected by all the pirates and the rebels in the Red Sea.
No.
So the boat that's got them on has had to be diverted to go round because all the pirate attacks and everything. So it's taken a few more days. So they've put it back 5 days just to make sure that all the books are here for people that have pre-ordered and want to order in time. So yeah, it's going to be a couple of days later, but this is a story behind it, and it's not at the bottom of the Red Sea, is it?
No, and that's a good thing, isn't it, where books are concerned?
Talking about underwater.
Tell us a bit more about your book. What made you write a book, and what can we expect that's different to any of the other books out there?
I wanted to... So basically, it's about growing your own. It's about vegetables, because that's what I love. And it's about growing from seed, because I think growing from seed gives you the biggest wide span of anything you can grow, and all about flavour and all about colour, because there are so many people that you'll know as an allotment holder, newbies always go, what should I grow? And it's like, well, grow what you like to eat. Yeah. And then once you grow what you like to eat, then you can start thinking, well, actually, why am I growing those white onions that cost me 39p in Aldi or other supermarkets are available for a kilo, when I can grow the pink-skinned ones or the really sweet ones or use that space for something like strawberries that are really expensive.
Yeah.
So it's about showing people what they can grow, but also what a lot of gardening books don't do, especially veg, they don't give you the varieties, so they don't tell you what those names are.
Yeah.
So this gives you the names of what I've grown. It gives you the photo of them. Tells you what they're for. So like this cucumbers for hanging baskets. So I got a hanging basket that's like a foot wide, and I've got three cucumber plants growing in it and got over 30 cucumbers from it. Just little baby ones, but they trail down rather than growing up. Things like that, things like potatoes that are blue inside or red inside. So when you cook them or make crisps or mash, it's totally different. And especially if you've got kids, we used to call it with my nephew and niece, we used to call it unicorn mash. Because you can give them a different colour mash on each bit of the plate. So all those different things that you never see in the supermarket at all. All the different types of tomatoes, the different types of peppers. You've got purple, orange, yellow, cauliflower, all the different things like that. And it's just to try and inspire people. If there's one thing to take away from it, it's don't grow your three gardener's delight in your grow bag. Make space for just one that's totally different and you might not normally grow, and you'll not basically regret it because it's a totally different flavour.
Yeah.
Just that trying sounds to great.
Inspire people.
Yeah. And I mean, it's funny you should say that because I have never, ever in all my time found a book that talks about Solyndra beetroot, the long ones. And for me, they are the ones that are the most versatile. They're the easiest to boil, the quickest to roast. And for me, I just think it's fantastic that you can cook it as quick as you can and get it pickled within the hour, literally, because they are long, but by crikey, they're very, very sweet. But honestly, I never hear about them and you never ever see them in a supermarket.
Yeah.
And they're just about perfect, aren't they? Because you can literally is like a carrot, chop, chop, chop. There's none of this rolling around on a chopping board or anything like that. But I also talk about things like, we're talking about beetroot, like there's one called Goldeneye, which is orange. Well, the orange ones and the white ones, they're sweeter, but also because they roast sweeter when you're cooking them. You don't end up looking like a murderer because you don't end up with red fingers. And God forbid, should you drop a slice of beetroot down your top when you're preparing it? That's it. It's ruined, isn't it?
Yeah.
The bleach is out and there's a few expletives. Whereas if it's orange or white, you get the flavour, you get the sweetness, which they're really good for kids because it encourages them to eat them. But you don't get that staining.
Yeah.
And top tip from the book, did you know you should fertilise your beetroot with salt?
No.
Basically, beetroots originate from plants that used to grow by the coast. And they're used to the salty conditions. And a lot of like farmers and that, when they're growing sugar beet or these bigger beetroots for animal feed, you can use a sodium-based fertilizer to make them bigger. So this is from an old gardening book my granddad had that was absolutely ancient. It must be from like the 40s. And you use...
Your time. Yeah, my time. Yeah.
Do you remember it well? You use one level teaspoon of sea salt, not table salt, but like sea salt dissolved in one big watering can. It's normally, is it a 9 gallon or 5 gallon, the big one? So basically, you dissolve it into the watering can and you water the row only once and only when they're very small, and that's it. And because it's got trace elements of boron and different things like that, you end up with a better crop and a bigger crop of beetroot.
And have you tried and tested that?
Yep.
Because when we go out and we do talks and all that malarkey, we do always tell people about things, but only when we've tried and tested them. We have, and we know they work.
Yeah.
So we're hoping that you've done that in your book and only talked about things that you've done and that you know work.
All everything in the book is all the stuff that I do. And I think every single photo in the book is taken in my garden. So I've stuff that I've grown.
Brilliant.
So it's not one of these that like they've taken it from, I don't know, a photo library or from wherever. So you'll notice that things in the background. So if you like follow me on Instagram or social media, you'll notice things in the background. So you can see that it's in my garden. It's either in the garden or towards the kitchen, or there's me in it, or one of the dogs in it. So you can tell they're all from the garden.
Another question to ask you, and I know it's something that you've commented on in social media, and it's something that drives us absolutely mad with starters, is it your book coming from the point of view of planting in the north? Because, of course, the social medias are full of people who are planting tomatoes, like last week, and you think, we live up north, you know, we can't do it now, and it drives us absolutely bonkers. And, of course, you're up north, so are your planting guides and information based on that northern contingent?
I would say they're based globally. So because the book comes out in America and Australia at the same time, we've had to be really careful with the seasons.
Yeah,
so it can't say March to April, because March to April in Australia is the middle of their winter. Yeah. So it will say early spring, whatever. But in the book at the beginning, I do explain basically how to read a seed packet.
Yeah.
Because as a seed packet, let's say it's a carrot and it says, so February to April. Well, the colder you are or the further you are up north, the later you leave it. So when it says February, if you're down on the Isle of Wight or you're down in Brighton or whatever, that's when you can start sowing because you're the warmest. If you're up in Scotland, you're going to take that right to the other end. So you're going to be April. So it's about almost how to interpret what it says in a seed packet, especially when it comes to those growing calendars, because the colder you are, the later you leave it, the warmer you are, the earlier you can do it.
And you split your book into 5 different sections. That's right. That's what you say. What made you do that?
Yeah, I think it's what things are. So I think when you've got your root crops, I think it's quite a nice group together to talk about those, because they can be sown or grown in similar ways, or they use similar equipment or similar areas.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Whereas if you said you grouped your potatoes with your tomatoes, you're going to be struggling because one's in a greenhouse normally and one's either in the ground, earthed up, or in a pot. So there's no relative similarity to talk about.
Yeah.
So I've tried to group them into like root crops. You've got greenhouse crops or tomatoes and cucumbers and things. You've got leafy crops, so leaves and stems, so things like salads, chards, sweet corn go in there because they're a bit easier to grow outside.
Yeah.
It was almost like you needed one chapter that encapsulated the and more type thing, which sweet corn is a bit of an abnormality. There's nothing really else
similar.
Like it.
Yeah.
And then you've got squashes and courgettes and things like that, which, crikey, they can go on forever, can't they? You've got your courgettes, your summer squash, your winter squash, your pumpkins, your everything else. So it was just trying to make it a little bit easier where things would merge together and be a bit more sensible in your head when you start reading it. And I've tried to explain where they can be grown as well. So if it's a smaller thing, I've tried to say, look, these things, even some of the cucumbers, which people don't realise can be grown in hanging baskets, or you can grow the tiny microtoms in a window box if you've only got that, or they can stay in the house on the kitchen windowsill if you want, because they're self-pollinating, so it makes no difference. You don't need them outside. And just give people a few ideas, really, because my garden, the majority of it is raised beds, and I grow everything. So if I can grow, like, I grow my sweet corn in half one of my raised beds, I plant closer than everybody tells you to. So I'll grow 16 to 20 plants in a 1.2 by 1.2 meter square. And I get just as many sweet corn off those plants as I would if I spaced them out more in a great big block on my allotment.
Okay. Now, have you done a glossary of terms by any chance? What words mean?
No, I haven't. I've explained things that might be a little bit confusing to newbies. I've explained as we've gone along and said, like, this means X, Y, Z. But sometimes I think, personally, if you've got a glossary of terms, if you're reading it, you'll understand and it explains it. If you've got a glossary of terms, sometimes it can almost feel like a textbook.
Yeah,
and I didn't want it to feel like a school book. The idea behind the book was, we've gone for some really lovely photos. I wanted it to be as good looking to look at the photos as it is useful for the information.
I know that you're a bit of a chef as well, looking at you on social media. So have you included any recipes in there or any suggestions?
There's a couple of suggestions and things that you can do, especially for things that you get a lot of gluts of. So things like chilies or tomatoes and things like that, because a lot of people, one of the main things I do with my tomatoes is freeze them whole. And so many people don't know you can freeze tomatoes whole. Just wash them, freeze them whole, and then put them in a bag or a zippy bag, put them back in the freezer, and then you can just take them out. If you defrost them, the skin slips straight off, so they're skinless straight away. And if you can't be bothered, I'll throw them literally into a curry, casserole, soup, frozen, and they just disappear, but they have the tomato flavour. Especially when you're harvesting and you're at your peak and you're manic in the garden till like 8, 9 o'clock at night. The last thing you want to do is come in the house and start making chutney and pickle and all that.
You want to do it in these months.
Exactly. Freeze them whole. And then when you've got nothing to do in December and January, Christmas is over and it's still rubbish like it is now, you can pick out a big 5 kilo sack of tomatoes out your freezer and make as much chutney as you want.
So then, Rob, if everybody else is going to be buying one of these books, what's it called? How much is it? And where can we get one from?
So it's called Grow to Eat, and it's available online and should be available in most garden centres and bookshops. And it costs £20.
We just want to thank everybody for listening. And if you want to get in touch, well, you know all those social media channels, don't you, Elaine?
Yes, I do, actually, yeah.
Come on, man.
Oh, right, OK, then. Facebook, Instagram and X at Potty Plotters. TikTok at The Potty Plotters. Email us, naughtycorner@pottyplotters.uk. Or check out our website, pottyplotters.uk.
And finally, we must say thank you to Rob. We really enjoyed speaking to you. And if you do have a book signing, remember to get that, what are they called? Not exclusion orders.
Well, you can do, but I quite fancy being his bouncer. The other thing is that if you want to, people can buy us a cup of coffee. Did you know that?
Are we going out
No. They can just do it and Gareth makes it all happen.
How do you do it?
So, if you enjoy what you're listening to and you'd like to support the podcast, then you can go to ko-fi.com/thepottyplotters and leave us a tip. It's a bit like when you go out for a meal and you slip a few quid to the waiter or waitress if you have some really good service. If you've enjoyed what you've listened to and you want us to continue, then go to ko-fi.com/thepottyplotters. That's ko-fi.com/thepottyplotters.
And next next time. Yeah. And next time we'll be looking at collecting our own late seeds. Now, another experiment. I know. But it is another experiment. And we're going to talk about tapes. Now, I don't mean tapes of like films and stuff.
You're going back to the 80s, 70s, aren't you?
Yeah, before you
pause,
were born.
Yeah.
Yeah, and let's see how good they are. But we're going to do something different.
The Plotcast Podcast with the Potty Plotters is an Amberland Media production.